Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Training Camp 50-50, Teddy versus Drew, powered by Twin Peaks. Here's Stokely and Zach.
ESPN ranked each NFL team based on their top tier talent. And where the Broncos fall on that list, it may surprise you. Huh. Now, this is, James, this is an annual list done by ESPN, and it is 25 and under. So there's like a definitive classification for
okay
top young talent. You got to be 25 or under. Okay. Denver's got some pretty good young players.
Yeah, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They also have a first-round pick on the defensive side of the ball, who we all think is going to be pretty good. Now, we can debate whether they should have taken him, but even someone like me who was yelling at the TV for him to select Justin Fields will admit Pat Surtain looks like a player. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt he's going to be a good player. So, yeah, they've got some good young talent for sure.
Now, you looked ahead at this segment.
I did.
My other regular co-host, Brandon Stokely, we normally play a guessing game here because he doesn't look ahead.
He doesn't read the rundown.
At the rundown. So
I can do that moving forward. That's fine.
No, just kind of play along with me here. If you didn't see it, where would you guess? You can't unsee what you saw. But
right.
Where would you guess the Broncos would be located on the list?
I would have thought they'd be somewhere between 10 and 16. Not quite top 10, but in the upper half. That would have been my guess. And I would have thought they would have leaned toward the top, closer to 10th than to 16th. Would have been where I would have expected them to be.
Okay.
Because I like their young talent. I do.
Me too. There is, now you gotta use your imagination a little bit and forecast guys like Pat Surtain, like Jerry Jeudy.
Sure.
Right? The picture's incomplete and not totally in focus yet. But I, like you, would probably have the Broncos in terms of 25 and under 12, 13, 14. You know, I wouldn't be stunned if they came in at 10 or 11.
Yeah.
But somewhere in the better half of the NFL.
But yeah. I mean, it's a roster that we've seen from Pro Football Focus ranking them sixth. I think ESPN had him 13th. Like,
I thought it was 10th from ESPN.
And then, yeah. So somebody had him 6th, 10th, and 13th. And NFL.com then must have him 13th for the overall roster. And I get it. That includes a bunch of the veterans and it's Von Miller and guys like that. But still, a lot of that is based on the young talent. Especially on the offensive side of the ball. So I would have thought it was pushing a top 10 group.
Okay. The Broncos on this list from ESPN.com came in at 17th.
Okay.
That by just basic logic. Now this is just ESPN. I think reasonable minds can disagree on this one, just like Pro Football Focus and ESPN had different outcomes for, it's up for interpretation is what I mean. But they're telling you in their minds, in terms of players that are 25 and under, compared to the rest of the NFL, that they're below average. There's 32 teams in the league. They rank 17th.
They're the valedictorian of the bottom half.
There you go.
Right. Yeah. I think that's probably a little harsh, but I do think we tend to, and it's not just with the Broncos. We do it with Michael Porter Jr. Rockies fans did it with, you know, Brendan Rodgers forever. Like, I think you tend to overestimate your own team's talent.
Yeah.
Right? Cause we see Noah Fant every day and we see him, you know, I don't know if he dominates practice, but man, he makes plays every day in practice. And we see Jerry Jeudy turning cornerbacks around. I'm like, these guys are going to be great. Okay. But the rest of the world, the rest of the league, the rest of the football pundits, they see what they've seen on film. What they've seen in games, what they see on the stat sheet, and it's fair to say it hasn't translated. I think Jerry Judy's going to have a monster year.
Agreed.
I really do.
Agreed.
But his season last year was the most notable thing about his season last year was the game in L.A. against the Chargers when he had all the drops. That was the thing that gets the most attention. Now, I tend to focus on the 92-yard catch and run he had with Drew Locke in the Raiders game in the finale. Like, yep, that's what that guy can be. Noah Fant, his rookie year, tended to get a lot of attention for, you know, kind of having alligator arms on a couple of plays, particularly in that I think it was a Sunday night game. Might have been Thursday. I think it was a Sunday night game against the Chiefs. But I tend to look at the 75-yard catch and run he had against the Browns and Brandon Allen started. Like, that's what that guy can do.
Yep.
But at some point, it has to translate into results. I just don't think it's a talent problem. I think it's a Pat Shurmur problem. If they can't get Noah Fant to be in the conversation for a Pro Bowl spot this year,
shame
on them.
Right. No, and I agree. I think by the end of the season, Noah Fant's going to be on everyone's top 10 tight end list. And if he doesn't, something, there was malpractice.
Yeah.
Because he's ready. And he's actually, you know, I got a note on Fant here. How about this? A career total of 1,235 receiving yards doesn't sound like a lot. So this is over 1,200, 1,235. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that puts tight end Noah Fant seventh among tight ends through their first 2 years since the passing rules changed in 2004. So we got a big sample size of over 15 years. Noah Fant's off to a really good start, but I think this year you'll see a rocket ship attached to him.
And in that time, he's played with Joe Flacco, Brandon Allen, Drew Locke, Jeff Driscoll,
Brett Rypien,
and Kendall Hinton.
Think about that.
That's
his first two years. What is that, six quarterbacks?
Yeah, and two offensive coordinators. And he's still been able to do that. So,
that's unbelievable. Hold on. That's unbelievable.
Yeah,
we got a player going into year three that has already played with six quarterbacks.
And if it's Teddy Bridgewater in the opener, it becomes seven.
That is hysterical.
It's hysterically sad,
of course.
Yeah, it's preposterous. It's ridiculous. But I don't think it's a Noah Fant problem. I don't think it's a Jerry Jeudy problem. I get it. The drops were, and that was a bad day. But I think that was more the aberration than the norm. He had a couple drops in the Titans game. They probably win that game if he catches a pass that Drew Lock hit him right in the hands with like 4 minutes to go that would have moved the chains and kept the clock rolling.
They win that game.
Instead, they have to punt it away, and Vic Fangio's defense couldn't hold the lead. So, there have been instances where it's on him. For sure, but I think both those guys are immensely talented. Here's the other way I look at this. Those two in particular, how many teams in the league would they not start on? I mean, I don't think Fant starts in Kansas City, and he probably doesn't start in Vegas.
San Francisco.
But he'd play a lot.
Outside of those three places, he starts probably everywhere else.
Right. Okay, so 29
Detroit,
teams.
TJ Hockenson, maybe.
29 teams. You could make the argument he starts.
Yeah.
How many teams does Jerry Jeudy not start on? Who's got two receivers? You're like, nah, that guy, he's not going to crack our lineup.
Right.
He'd start in Kansas City.
Right.
Opposite Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
He would.
Yeah.
They're not sure who
Jerry Jeudy in Kansas City's offense.
Yeah, that would be
embarrassment
of riches.
Like crazy.
But both those guys would start for basically every team in the league. You know, Buffalo's got good receivers, so maybe he doesn't crack that lineup. But he probably, I mean, it's Stephon Diggs and Beasley, right? So he beats out Beasley.
Probably.
So I think he would start for almost every team in the league. Then it's not a talent issue.
So
that's not the problem.
But this brings up this whole conversation and this list where the Broncos landed 17th in terms of 25 and under. It's jaded. It's jaded, and I'll tell you why coming up next.
It's Training Camp 50-50, Teddy versus Drew, powered by Twin Peaks. Here's Stokely and Zach.
So James and I were just talking, and James Marilab from DenverFan.com sitting in for Brandon Stokely today as Stoke makes his way back from Canton, Ohio. Got a nice little shot of Stoke on camera last night, sitting right next to Ashley Manning. Peyton thanked his wife.
Big deal.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. And I can only imagine the stories that are going to come out of this weekend in Canton. And I'm sure some will be able to share on the air and some not so much. But, a double dose of Hall of Fame over the course of Saturday and Sunday. Looking forward to Stokely being back here tomorrow, hearing some of those stories. But in the meantime, James and I were discussing this piece posted from ESPN.com, ranking every NFL team by their top-tier young talent, all right? Top-tier young talent. This is 25 and under, all right? And the Broncos, we think, have a lot of good young players. But they came in at 17th on this list, which in a league of 32 technically is below average. Kind of looking at it like, huh? But I told you going into the break, James, I believe that this list is seriously jaded. Because when you play a dependent position, you are inherently relying on someone else. And I want to know where the Broncos, the exact same collection of players, would rank on a list like this. Forget Aaron Rodgers. If Matthew Stafford was the quarterback of this team, and I think our perception and the tangible thing that would be, you know, that you're relying upon is a massive upgrade, you're going to get just better results. And I just wonder where they would end up on a list like this if not an Aaron Rodgers, but a top half of the league's quarterback was quarterbacking this team.
So even though Matthew Stafford obviously doesn't factor in because he's not under 25, he's not 25 and under, he would increase the perception of Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant. Heck, you may even see a K.J. Hamler work their way in there.
Like, where would those guys' season totals be put at by Superbook or otherwise?
They would be higher.
For sure.
Right? For sure. And so part of the problem is the Broncos don't know who the quarterback is. The other part of this is one of the players who's included in this is a 24-year-old quarterback at the moment. And most people don't think very highly of him. So it's almost like they'd be better off to not have Drew Lock in the mix because it brings their overall score down.
He's
hurting the average. He's the Russian judge.
He's the Russian.
That is killing Russia. The average here, which I think is a little bit unfair, but I get it. He didn't have a good year last year. But if you start thinking about, well, how many really good quarterbacks are there? There's a lot of good young quarterbacks, but how many of them are 25 and under? Like, what's Josh Allen's age? Does he qualify for that? Does Lamar qualify? Does Baker? Like, they got to all be right on the fringe.
Josh Allen is 25.
Okay, because Dalton Reisner was drafted 3 years ago, and he's 26, same year as Drew Lock, so he's already past it.
Right.
So you never know. For 4 years ago, those guys might have been out of it.
Lamar Jackson is 24.
Okay, so they're clearly in there. So when those guys are in the mix, one who's been to an AFC title game, one who's already won an MVP, yeah, Drew Lock's going to look pretty bad in comparison. But I think Justin Herbert's going to be a really, really good quarterback.
Going to be.
Okay, maybe he already
gonna
is.
Going to be. How about this? How about this? And someone prove me wrong. Think about this statement. This is going to hurt, okay? But lean into the truth. Justin Herbert had the greatest rookie season of any quarterback of all time.
Justin Herbert had the greatest rookie season of any quarterback of all time. I would have to look at what Dan Marino's numbers were as a rookie. That would be about the only one I could think of off the top of my head that might have been similar.
And I'm not saying it because I want it to be true. It just kind of is what it is. Justin Herbert in 15 football games completed 67% of his passes, threw for 4,336 yards, over 300 yards per game, 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions.
Okay, bad example on my part. Let me go with Joe Burrow and Tua.
Oh, I wasn't trying to show you up. I've been wanting to say that because I have been doing some research on that. And it's like, find me a better rookie season for any quarterback in the history of professional football.
I'm just trying to find someone who would be on that list that they think, hey, this guy's going to be good. Like Joe Burrow, he's going to be good. Well, okay, he's coming off of an injury, and Drew Lock was 4-1 as a rookie. You know, we were all thinking much higher of him a year ago than we do right now. I'm not saying Joe Burrow's going to fall on his face like that. But do we know Joe Burrow is going to be a great pro? I don't think so. Do we know Tua? I think even less chance of that.
Right.
I mean, he kept getting relieved by Ryan Fitzpatrick last year. So some of the guys that are probably ahead of Drew Lock on this list of quarterbacks under 25, because he's probably last of the actual starters, I think maybe that's a little bit of an unfair judgment, because I think he's better than the perception at the moment. It's part of the reason why I think the Broncos are just missing the boat here. I think they're totally missing the opportunity to try and turn a kid with a ton of talent. Did you see the throw he made on Sunday? I know we weren't there, but have you seen it on social media, the touchdown to Cortland Sutton?
It's unbelievable. Did that ball go 70 yards in the air?
It was just right in stride, perfect throw. Like, you can't do it any better. Teddy Bridgewater can't make that throw. There's not been a moment at training camp where we've said, Drew Lock can't do that. I mean, maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't check down to the running back over and over and over again. Maybe he doesn't throw 2-yard passes over and over and over again, but he can do it. That's why I think this whole thing is silly. The Broncos are going to go, they want to go with the safe option. Why? Why are you trying to rein in Drew Lock? Why are you trying to turn Drew Lock into a robotic game manager when he has that kind of talent? Now, if he was Trevor Siemian and he's going to have to beat you with the cerebral approach to football, okay, I get that that's what you're trying to turn him into. But when you got a guy who can make that throw, and there's probably a dozen quarterbacks in the league who can make that throw, why on earth are you trying to squelch that?
It reminds me of a philosopher who years ago said this.
You start pulling the reins back on a horse, and pretty soon the horse isn't a horse anymore.
Agreed. All of a sudden, we're going to look up and be like, we don't recognize Drew Lock, because you're trying to force Drew Lock to be something he's not. Now, can you make him a better player in terms of decisions? Sure. But this whole, we're trying to take the gunslinger out of him. Why? I want a gunslinger. Yeah, I want a gunslinger who's, you know, hitting the target more often than Drew Lock has. But my gosh, we've been watching game managers for 5 years. We want to watch somebody that can go out there and make some plays. And I'm not saying he's Brett Favre. I'm not saying he's John Elway. But both those guys made a ton of mistakes. And it's sort of the light bulb sort of went on when we were down there Saturday. Of why are we asking Drew Lock to go play mistake-free, don't do anything stupid, just take the check down type football? It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand why they're trying to do that with him. It's not where his skill set, it's not what comes naturally to him. It's not the way he's played his whole life. It's not what his arm talent, if you have that kind of arm, of course you're going to be a gunslinger because you think you can get it into spots that other guys can't. It's taken someone who has immense talent and not building off those talents. It's trying to squelch those talents and build things that aren't there, right? Like, they didn't try and turn Josh Allen into a cerebral quarterback in Buffalo. Now, he's gotten smarter about the NFL game as years have gone on, but they didn't say, let's not run, let's not make big throws, let's not try and fit it into tight windows, let's turn Josh Allen into, you know, Teddy Checkdown. It's such a backward logic and such a backward developmental process that they're doing over there that I think Drew Lock, to getting back to this list, if they let Drew Lock be Drew Lock, I don't know if he's going to be Justin Herbert. I don't. I'm not going to go that far. But do I think he could put up big numbers and could win a lot in this league? Yeah, I do. I think they're totally underutilizing him over there at Dove Valley. I think it's laughable.
Just for context, because I said one could argue that statistically Justin Herbert had the greatest rookie season of any quarterback of all time. Dan Marino's first year played 11 games and had completed 58% of his passes, so 10% less than Herbert, okay. Through 20 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. So, I mean, awesome season. You know, I don't mean to be, you know, using Marino, you know, like slighting him by any means. Herbert's rookie season was that good statistically.
Yeah, and he went toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. Now, they lost the games.
Yeah. But still.
It wasn't because of Justin Herbert.
It's still, though, if you're a Chargers fan and you're watching that, you don't care about the final score necessarily.
You don't.
Because they went into last season the same way that Broncos country went into last season as well. You just hope to see enough flashes that lead you to believe that that guy can be the guy. And you saw it over and over with Herbert, regardless of what the overall record said.
Wins and losses didn't matter. The numbers did, right? It's not just about the eye test, because the 31, what was it, 10 picks? So you said 31 touchdowns, 10 picks?
Correct.
Which is pretty remarkable
It's insane. It's insane. Who didn't know he was going to play until 30 seconds before he actually played?
Right, against the Chiefs.
Right.
The defending Super Bowl champions. Pretty remarkable, for sure. But it's also a guy that they looked at and said, well, what does he do well? And let's have him go do that. And they didn't have training wheels on him. You don't throw for 31 touchdowns. You don't average 300 yards a game if they're asking you to be a game manager. You just don't. So it's also a coaching staff that said, we don't care if we win or lose. We want to see if that guy can play. The Broncos didn't do that. And they're not going to do it again this year. Because what's the goal this year? Save Vic Fangio's job. Not to develop the quarterback who could potentially be the quarterback of the future. That is misguided priorities at Dove Valley.
Man, that is, you and I had this conversation off the air. What is the goal? Or we'll be on the air. I forget.
It might have been Friday.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is the goal of the Broncos season? Really interesting question. I'm actually going to tweet that out here during the break. You can follow me on Twitter at Byzline. James, you are?
At James Marillette.
At James Marillette. Super creative.
Yes.
I'm going to tweet that question out.
Brainstorm for hours.
I want to hear your guys' response to that question. If you want to interact with that tweet, I'm going to fire it off in a T-minus 30 seconds. But another follow-up pushback I have to this list, the phrasing about one player that I'm going to throw a challenge flag on, and I'll do that next.
It's Training Camp 50-50, Teddy versus Drew, powered by Twin Peaks. Here's Stokely and Zach.
All right, already some interesting responses pouring in on my Twitter account. I just asked a simple question, and I tweeted this out 4 minutes ago. If you want to interact with the tweet, I am going to read some replies on the air. You can follow me at Byesline, B-Y-E-S-L-I-N-E. And some interesting response to the question, serious question, yet simple question. What is the goal of the 2021 season? Well, this time last year, it was to find out, the phrase that I said, probably our listeners thought ad nauseum, was if you get to the end of the road and of the 2020 season, if you get to the end of the road and you're still willing to walk down the road with Drew Lock, that's what you need. Like, you don't need to know conclusively whether he's going to be a 12-year franchise quarterback. What we were hoping to see was, is there enough to just continue down the road with him? And, you know, the fan base is still divided on that a little bit. You try to, James and James Marillette from DenverFan.com filling in for Brandon Stokely as Stoke makes his way back from Canton. He'll be with us tomorrow. You try to tell Drew's side of things a little bit more than a lot of our other hosts here at the station. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't absolve him of, culpability in the fact that he hasn't played very well at times, but I think he's very much had the deck stacked against him. I don't think it's been sabotage. I don't think the Broncos have intentionally set him up to fail, but I also don't think they've set him up for success. They just haven't. You know, if you go back to planting him on IR for 11 weeks, right?
That was dumb.
He didn't even get to go to practice and meetings and things like that. Firing his offensive coordinator, bringing in an offensive coordinator who's not exactly known for developing quarterbacks. Then you have the offseason where he's having to make a transition to a new OC and it's COVID. That's not their fault, but that's a fact. The list goes on and on and on and on of things they've done that haven't been in Drew's best interest. And if you were designing, hey, we drafted this guy, here's our blueprint for developing him, none of these things would have been on the list. They certainly shouldn't have been. So if you put all these obstacles in front of them, none of which should be impossible to overcome, right? Like, you're not going to have just a road paved in gold from your rookie year all the way to Canton.
Yeah.
You got to overcome some obstacles. So, and these are all, they're all things that can be overcome. But they still have been there. And to not acknowledge those and just say, hey, the kid can't play, or the kid doesn't work hard enough, or the kid doesn't have a good enough football IQ, I think are totally unfair. I think for me to ignore his interceptions would be being oblivious, and
yes,
I don't.
Yes.
But to ignore the comeback against the Chargers, the 92-yard touchdown pass to Jerry Jeudy, the game in Carolina, I think that's unfair too.
So I really don't disagree with you. My problem is when the list runs out at 3 and you played 15 games. That's where my problem is.
I think I could make the list longer. Those are just the 3 off the top of my head.
What's the fourth one that comes to mind?
Here's the thing. Here's the problem.
And I'm taking away the Jeudy one in terms of evaluating Drew's season.
And we're just talking last year.
Yeah. I mean, 2020 was on a tee, served up as an incredible opportunity for a second round quarterback to grab the reins of this organization.
I thought in the opening game, the scramble to his right, throw the ball back across to the left, a dart to Noah Fant in the end zone for a touchdown.
That was awesome.
Was like, you know what?
That's a good one.
Not a lot of guys can make that play.
That's a good one.
But I even can look at the Raider game in Vegas, which was an abject disaster. He threw four picks. They got blown out in that game. But he had moments.
That's like your favorite game.
He played well.
That's your favorite Drew game.
It's that game against the Raiders. He threw four picks and got blown out. You should have seen him.
I think I use that example because it's the one that everybody will hang their hat on of, like, look how terrible he is. But if you watch the first half of that game, he actually plays pretty well right up until the end, which is kind of like, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Lincoln enjoyed the play right up until the very end.
Right.
But he did some things. He showed some great toughness, right? He took a big hit, came right back, led a drive. Like, there were things in that game where you sit there and go, that guy can play. Now, it's not his fault that the defense could not get him the ball back. Go back and look at the game sheet. They ran three plays in the third quarter because the Raiders got the ball after halftime. Long drive, touchdown. Broncos go three and out. That's on Drew. Ball goes back to the Raiders, long drive and touchdown. So it went from 10-6, first and goal, at the end of this first half, to it's now, what, 24-6, and you've run three plays.
So
that's not all on Drew.
That game is so interesting to me because you know how many points the Raiders scored that Sunday? 37, okay? How many yards do you think Derek Carr threw for?
Not many.
150.
Yeah. It was
how many touchdowns? How many touchdowns do you think he had?
If any.
None.
They ran the ball all over the Broncos.
So check this out.
And this is another Booker game.
That's right. This is another.
Yes.
This is a game like in the second Raiders game, week 17. I have said, and I've challenged our audience repeatedly over the last year. I'm sure you've heard me say this. When other time in an NFL game are you plus four in the turnover margin? Have 10 less penalties than your opponent and lose. I would challenge that is the only game like it in NFL history. If you finish minus one in the turnover margin, your chances of winning the game get slashed in half. If you're minus two, if you're minus three, like it's impossible.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
if you're minus four and you have 10 more penalties than your opponents, you just lose that game 100% of the time, and now it's 99.9999% because the Broncos found a way to lose that game. But in the previous Raiders game, I just reset that for context and how unusual the two Raiders games were. How many times in the history of professional football does a team score 37 points and the quarterback doesn't throw a touchdown or get over 154 yards?
Almost never. Almost never. But if you look at that game, right? The only thing people talk about is the fact that Drew Lock threw four interceptions. That's it. Now, that's a big reason why they lost.
yeah,
without a doubt. But that's also the end statistics.
Right.
It was 10-6 coming out of halftime. And your defense, and we can look it up, gave up a long drive. The Broncos go three and out. Shame on them. They tended to do that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
In the second half. Their first drive of the second half after all those adjustments was three plays, and here comes Sam Martin. The Raiders get the ball back, long drive, and a touchdown. And the Broncos have run three plays, and they're down 24-6, and it's over. And now you're trying to chuck it all over,
right,
and you're
right,
throwing
right.
picks and everything else. So Vic Fangio's defense doesn't get any blame for that. The fact that they could not get the Raiders off the field, they did the exact same thing in the Tennessee game. In the second half, Tennessee dominated time of possession, and the Broncos blew a halftime lead. But all of that gets overlooked because it's just easier, it's more convenient, it fits your narrative to blame the quarterback. Again, I'm not absolving a guy of a four interception day.
Well, you just said you're pointing to the narrative in a game that he threw four picks. I mean, you can't throw four picks.
You can't. But it was also a game in which he did some good things.
He did. It wasn't all bad.
And there were a lot of
but
bad things
thing,
by other
James,
guys.
But James, here's the thing. He's an NFL quarterback. We should see some good things. He had an opportunity
enough.
To be a franchise quarterback last year. If you're in the position to have that opportunity, we should see some flashes in the midst of four picks.
Agreed. Okay, so it's his year to try and prove that he's going to be a franchise quarterback. Would it have been better? Would he had a better chance of doing that if they'd have brought back the offensive coordinator that helped him go 4-1, throw seven touchdowns and three picks? Or if they go bring in a guy who's never developed a good young quarterback? They would have been better off to keep Rich Gangarello than to bring in Pat Shurmur, and now he's trying to prove that he can be a big-time NFL quarterback with Pat Shurmur as his OC. Doesn't mean it's impossible. Doesn't excuse the poor play in certain games. But it also didn't stack the deck in his favor. And I just think if you've got a guy who has a chance to be a franchise quarterback, and he does. Now, I think Justin Herbert is a 98% chance of being a franchise quarterback. Drew Lock is probably a 28% chance at this point. So they're different. But if you got a guy who has the chance, Trevor Siemian was never going to be a franchise quarterback. We all knew that from day one. But if you have a guy who has a chance.
Not everyone knew.
Yeah. Almost everyone. If you have a guy who has the chance to be a franchise quarterback, though, why don't you do everything possible to help that guy succeed? And I use the example over and over and over again, but you know it as well as anybody because you have connections back there. The way the Buffalo Bills handled Josh Allen, a very raw talent coming out of Wyoming.
Very raw.
Is the blueprint for here's how you do it. They didn't try to force a square peg in a round hole, ask him to do things he's not good at, and then be mad at him when he doesn't do them well.
Right.
Like it's foolishness, and they're still doing it. They're trying to get him to be Teddy Bridgewater, and like the only way he can win this job is to prove he's as much Teddy Bridgewater as Teddy Bridgewater. Raise your hand if you want Teddy Bridgewater. I don't. So why are we trying to turn Drew Lock into Teddy Bridgewater? It makes no sense.
All right, still a ton to react to. The conversation is spilling into my Twitter replies. This serious yet simple question I want to toss out to Broncos country. What is the goal of the 2021 season? I will read some of those replies before we get off the air. But in the meantime, we hit the brakes because it was a big-time weekend for, I think, the state of Colorado and Broncos country as a whole. And we look back at Peyton Manning, John Lynch, Steve Atwater, and hear from them coming up next.
It's Training Camp 50-50, Teddy versus Drew, powered by Twin Peaks. Here's Stokely and Zach.
James Merrillat filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Stoke is making his way back from Canton, Ohio, hopefully with some stories that he can tell on air. I guarantee you that dude's hurting. I don't know anything about anything, but that dude is hurting today.
Have you ever had one of those flights home from Vegas where you're like, this is the longest plane ride I've ever been on in my life? Like, I just want to get home. I just want to get in bed. I have a feeling that's Stokely's commute back from Canton today.
No, just
a hunch.
No question. Now,
and as it should be.
Now, the plane that he's riding in is a little bit more comfortable than the Frontier, right angle.
The jump seat.
Yeah, right. So hopefully we can dig into Stoke a little bit about his weekend in Canton, Ohio. All right, James. What a weekend! What when you look back at Saturday, Sunday, Broncos country DNA all over this thing. What stuck out to you the most?
I thought it was one speech on Saturday and one speech on Sunday that kind of got my attention. So it was Steve Atwater on Saturday. I thought he was really, really good. Now look, the speech wasn't something that people are going to be playing clips of because he had some great point or hilarious story or great jokes or whatever. But I thought he did a really good job of thanking everybody that helped him get there. And it was just so Steve Atwater to make it all about everybody else. He didn't talk about himself at all. So I thought that was just a really nice speech. But then Peyton Manning last night just hit it out of the park. And was he a little rushed because he was trying to beat the clock? Sure. But it was just such a well-scripted speech in terms of, he comes out of the gate with some jokes about Tom Brady and Ray Lewis.
We actually have a cut of Peyton taking a little shot at Tom Brady here.
Next year, acceptance speeches will probably shrink to 4 minutes. And speaking of rivals, my good friend Tom Brady is here tonight. By the time he is inducted... My By the time Tom Brady is inducted in his first year of eligibility in the year 2035, he'll only have time to post his acceptance speech on his Instagram account.
I mean, dude,
it's just the delivery's perfect.
That's it.
The jokes are good, right? Like, he's poking fun of him. He poked fun of Ray Lewis for still just wrapped up his speech from 2018. But they weren't mean-spirited.
No.
You know, they're just...
I mean, Brady's there as Peyton's guest.
Right.
How about that?
Which is cool. That's a lot.
Really cool full circle thing. And that was the only time during the night that Peyton let the crowd pop and just let them continue to do their thing.
Right.
That was my only drawback from Peyton's speech, is that he didn't get too full, because Peyton knows the temperature of the crowd.
Yeah.
And you can use that like a pro wrestler would.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He gets it. And because the time, and I thought he was just a little bit, I mean, he knocked it out of the park, but if he was just allowed to just be more Peyton. But that was a good example of it. Like, oh my God, they're booing Brady this much.
Right, right.
And Brady turned around and goes, what did I do? It's like, what's up with that?
Which, by the way, at this point, if you're booing Tom Brady, like, there was a time when Tom Brady was, you know, at the top of the villain list. But at some point, a guy is so good and has so much success that you have to just kind of accept it and be like, I respect the heck out of that guy. I'm not going to boo him now.
Right.
So the fact that he got booed was funny. But look, Peyton Manning had the best speech of the weekend, and I don't even think it was particularly close, which is what we all expected. That actually kind of makes it harder to hit that standard, though, because we all expected his speech to be great.
Right, right.
And so to live up to those standards and still deliver, I thought was awesome.
It's Peyton. You know what I mean? Like, what else? Like, it's Peyton.
I also think, real quick, I also think watching that speech, that guy could go do and be whatever he wants to be or do. If he wants to run for governor in multiple states, he could win in Indiana, Tennessee, and Colorado. He could run for president and probably be a pretty good contender.
Yeah.
Kanye
was on the ticket.
Commissioner. He could be commissioner of the NFL.
No
question.
Would
it shock you if he replaced Roger Goodell?
No, dude.
He'd be perfect.
The last 3 minutes of that speech
was like a campaign for that.
Who loves football more than Peyton Manning? I mean, seriously, there's like, you gotta love it to whatever degree to play as long as he did and put so much time in preparation, but he just oozes a joy for the game of football that I don't know if I've ever seen before. And this is Peyton talking about the game he loves.
If football has become my home, the people of the great states of Louisiana, Tennessee, Indiana, and Colorado have become my extended family. And as everyone knows, you can never really leave family behind. I never expected to stand on this stage tonight. If it weren't for those busts and the memories of forever loyal fans, tonight's details would blur and cheers would fade. However, our hearts will cradle the memories forever. Throughout our lives as players, coaches, staffs, and fans, we've become essential to the sports landscape. I don't know about you, but I'm not done with this game. I never will be. I'm committed to ensuring its future, and I hope you will join me in that commitment. As members of this honored class, we have a responsibility to make our game stronger, from the corner playground to the most celebrated stadiums. During the past 2 years, the game of football has been challenged by an explosion of sports and entertainment options, safety concerns, erupting social justice issues, and a worldwide pandemic. Displaced fans have taken on an entirely new meaning as our stadiums have been shut down and fans shut out. We certainly shouldn't walk away now.
I mean, it's makes the hair on your arm stand up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just fantastic. Making great points. Saying it in a way that everybody can follow and understand.
For
which
sure.
But not being simple, right? Like, that's a pretty deep message. And he doesn't say it in a simpleton way, but he also says it in a way that, you know what? Everybody can follow what he's saying. Like, that's kind of the art of a great communicator. I thought that was fantastic.
Here's more from Peyton.
When we leave this stage tonight, it is no longer about us. It is about cultivating the game that has given so much to us. It's about nurturing football to live and thrive another day, another year, decade, and another generation. It's about guaranteeing that kids everywhere can learn, bond, grow, and have fun with every flag pulled, every tackle made, every pass thrown, every run, block, sack, and touchdown scored. The audience here tonight is made up of diehard fans who feel football deep in your bones. Now, we may have ignited the fire, but you have fanned the flames. Inevitably, those flames will be whipped by the winds of change, but they don't need to smolder. The future of this game is ours to shape. We just need to take tomorrow on our shoulders as readily as we donned our pads before each game. Let this moment become a cherished memory. And then remember, a legacy is only worthwhile when there is a future to fuel. God bless you and God bless football.
Golly. I mean, it literally sounds like he is on a campaign trail. That's how you would end a rally. And you're right next to me in the studio.
Yeah.
The hair on my arms is completely standing up. This is KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver.
The King is here.
You thought about it.
You know, no, I had.
Did Peyton make you forget?
I totally got caught okay. up in Peyton. Had no idea it was 158, and it was time to do that. Normally, I'm pretty ready. No,
I know.
And
you
still
cast
to cheat to win when I'm here. I had no shot at it today.
But what a perfect way to end what he said, a legacy. Like, what does a legacy matter if there's no future? Because a legacy gets remembered and reminisced.
Right.
But if there's no future, there is no legacy.
Yeah. No, it's a great point. I think he was, he's communicating that to, you know, all of his fellow classmates and fellow Hall of Famers and the current players that are in the audience and everybody that's watching at home that's taking it in of, you know, we got something pretty good here. It's kind of on us not to screw it up. And to keep pushing it forward and to figure out ways to make the game better and better and better, or safer and safer and safer, or whatever things you think are potential troubles for the NFL. How do we, you know, rectify those situations? You mentioned the social injustice. Like, there's a lot of, you know, things and challenges that the league faces, that the sport faces. But he sounded like a guy that was certainly willing to take those things on head on. And yeah, it did sound like he's, you know, campaigning for commissioner. That's exactly what it sounds like. The other part of it is he talked about, and they showed pictures of him coaching his kids in flag football. And they're in the version where they're wearing like the little NFL jerseys.
Yeah.
And the last year of doing that this past spring, like for, I don't know, 10, 12 years I've been doing that with my kids. Can you imagine showing up at the field on a Sunday at 1 o'clock for your game and Peyton Manning's the coach of the other team? I don't care if it's 7-year-olds. You're like, oh, we don't have a shot here today, guys.
I mean,
we're toast.
It's hysterical. And believe it or not, during that time period, Peyton hit up Stokely for some plays.
Really?
And I came in here early one time, and Stokely was literally by himself jotting down plays. I'm like, I've never seen you do that. He's like, yeah, Peyton's coaching. He wants it from a wide receiver standpoint. I'm like, he wants a wide receiver standpoint for Marshall's youth team? Hysterical.
Yeah,
really good.
Funny.
And you mentioned you, you know, doing the football stuff with your kids. Peyton came up that way under Archie. And you know the level of reverence for his father. That's who he chose to induct him.
Yeah.
But you really hear it in his voice here.
Football carved out a place for my favorite quarterback, my hero, my role model, my dad, Archie Manning, to pass on something he loved to me. Dad, there's no one I would rather have or be more appropriate than you to welcome me to this stage. My dad enabled me to play balls with my brother, Cooper and Eli, the two best brothers a guy could ask for. And it gave my mom plenty of reasons to both beef me up and patch me up. You talk about lucking out with the most loving mother who could also break down a cover two defense as well as any NFL quarterback.
Really cool. I almost have to catch myself because I feel myself, you know, getting emotional.
Yeah.
When his voice is cracking, talking about his dad.
And that was certainly the most emotional he got in his speech. I don't know if you were watching before he came on when he was backstage. And before they went to commercial And then when they came back from commercial and it was about time for him to go out there, yep. and Chris Berman was talking, like he was emotional by the whole kind of situation. And the, because if you're Peyton Manning, how many years has he known I'll be in Canton someday? Like a decade?
At least.
At least, right? If he never came to Denver,
probably after
he
won his third MVP, let alone his fifth.
Right. So he came to Denver in 2012. That was 9 years ago. He was strolling into the Hall of Fame as a first ballot guy if he never played it down for the Broncos. If the neck injury ended his career, he was surefire.
Yep.
So he's known for at least a decade that this moment would be there, and it still choked him up and hit him, the kind of the, just the gravity of it, the hugeness of it, when it was finally there. I thought that was kind of cool, because when you see people who just don't seem to ever be overwhelmed by a situation or, you know, kind of out of their element or a little bit, you know, over their skis, so to speak, to see them when they have to deal with that, because he clearly had to deal with it.
Yeah.
And then he had to go out and deliver, you know, a speech with everybody watching and everybody having big expectation, and he hits it out of the park. I just thought that whole thing was cool of, oh, you're nervous too. Okay. We all would be. And then he got up there and just, you know, delivered perhaps the speech of a lifetime. So, for him. So it was really cool all around. Very, very cool weekend and just a great performance by Peyton.
You know, fans here in town, Broncos country, has advocated for Peyton to be directly involved with the Broncos. You know, the guy who is the president of football right now is on the job really in title only for one more year. And we got confirmation of that when John tweeted out training camp's right around the corner, and we were 3 days into training camp, if you ever needed a better indicator.
Yeah, that was clear.
And you know, there has been calls. Have new ownership. I've heard D-Max say, what better move could you make than, as a new owner, bring in Peyton Manning to run football? You're the president of football. It's a big title. Were we not thinking big enough for Peyton? His final 3 minutes, Peyton is so calculated. Who is more cerebral than Peyton Manning? When he knows he has the world stage, mm-hmm. and everyone is forced to watch, not forced to watch, but you know what I mean. If you're involved in that world, you watched. When do you ever have that kind of platform?
You don't.
You don't. And what Peyton decided to do with that platform, when I say not thinking big enough, I know you already mentioned it, it's been suggested on social media. Like, could Peyton actually be aiming to be the next commissioner years down the road after Roger Goodell hangs it up?
It certainly felt like it. It sounded like it, right? Like, it didn't sound like a speech that you were trying to convince Jeff Bezos that he should bring you in to be president of football operations. It didn't sound like that. When you start talking about the future of the game as a whole, then yeah, it's a Pete Rozelle, Paul Tagliabue, Roger Goodell type of a campaign. That's certainly what I was thinking. Now, would I love him to be in charge of the Broncos, to be part of the ownership group and to run football operations and to rectify this mess? Because there's no doubt in my mind he would. Now, it may not happen immediately, but he would figure it out, and we wouldn't put up with the nonsense we've been watching for 5 years, without a doubt. I would love for that to happen. But do I think that's big enough? No, I don't. Because like I said, the guy could literally do whatever he decides he wants to do. You want to be president of the United States, yeah. the most powerful person yeah. on earth.
Yeah.
You probably have a pretty good chance of getting that gig if you decide to do it. Now, that gets into whole other levels of, you know, who knows how that it could go once you jump into the campaign. But I guarantee you, whatever side he got in on, everybody else in that party on the ticket would be thinking, oh, there went my chances.
Right.
Like, it just feels like he could write his own ticket, whatever he wants to do.
I got to read this text because some people are just human beings. Actually, we don't want Peyton in Denver. That's just the 104.3 The Fan's narrative. Okay.
Really?
Okay.
We don't. That guy isn't the guy you would handpick to choose to run this team and turn it around.
Yeah. We don't want Peyton Manning involved.
Said, a lot of tech to test the term. That was a lot.
We don't want Peyton Manning involved. Said no one ever.
Who?
Liar!
Okay, here would be my question to that guy or gal, whoever it was. If you don't want Peyton Manning, who's your choice? But nobody's surefire. Nobody's 100%. Nobody is going to, without a doubt, win 5 Super Bowls here. Like, you never know. Anybody can fail at anything. But who has better odds of success if they got that job than Peyton Manning? Who? Who would be the pick?
No, because everything that he has touched has turned to gold.
Yeah.
And here's why I think a run at commissioner, because when Roger Goodell's done, Roger Goodell's still going to do this for years, but I don't think Peyton is going to take on a role like that or, team president or whatever while his kids are still as young as they are. I do think he wants these part-time gigs so he can be a dad. I don't think that's some fake thing out there. But he's living his life as proof positive as to that and the things that he's turned down. But another element of Peyton that I think is interesting is that when he was offered the initial, I think it was – whether it was Sunday night, Monday night, whatever it was, he's been offered a handful of them now, and now Thursday night football through Amazon Prime and all this stuff. It's all come his way, and he's turned it all down. But the one time that he did early on is he said something along the lines of, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but it was like, I'm not a big fan of, being critical of guys. Like, he does not like to, this is what you don't do. This was bad. Like, you only hear him compliment. He does the Peyton's, places, but after the Kobe one detail just highlighting all good stuff.
Yeah.
But when you put on that other hat, you have to be critical. When you're commissioner, you're rooting for everyone to succeed. And I think that profiles, and I know I'm kind of going out of the box a little bit here, but maybe you might not get the competitive rocks off that you would if you're the team president or something like that. But when you're the commissioner, you're rooting for the league and you're rooting for the sport. And that came through that speech he gave last night.
Well, not only do you not have to be critical of guys, and that sometimes if you were the president of football operations would lead to firing coaches,
There you go.
Being involved with, we need to upgrade at quarterback.
Right.
Right. Like, being involved. Maybe you're not the one cutting a guy, but you're probably in on the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that would be difficult. But you're also then reliant on other people for you to succeed. Yeah, it's going to scratch the competitive itch. But if the coach doesn't do his job or the quarterback doesn't do his job, it doesn't matter if you did your job really well. If they flop, then you're not going to succeed. So you're reliant on other people. And I don't mean this in a negative way, but he's kind of a control freak.
Sure. Oh, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's clear.
So I think he's someone who wants to be in control of his own destiny. Like, if he fails, it's because he threw the interception or he didn't read the defense and he made the mistake. Yeah, being commissioner, you're not going to have the wins from the competitive standpoint, but you're also not going to have the losses that are outside of your control. That does seem like a perfect gig for a guy that has kind of the affinity for the sport that he does. Hearing that speech, I thought it, the more we've talked about it, that does feel like the direction he's going. And look, what's Roger Goodell make? $40 million a year?
Yeah.
It's a pretty good gig.
Yeah. And they offered 20 to try to, match Gruden's, or not Gruden's, although he was formerly the highest paid employee at ESPN.
Tony Romo, right?
Tony Romo.
Yeah. Yeah.
They gave it to him. He said, no, if you double it,
Well, and it's funny you said he doesn't want to miss stuff as, with his kids when they're young. Because what's he doing, 10 Monday night games?
Yeah, I think so.
So that makes it really easy. You just don't do a game Thanksgiving weekend. You don't do a game Christmas weekend.
And they're also remotely, so you don't have to physically be there.
You're not traveling. But if you're Tony Romo, and you're getting $1 million a week, and, we should all have this, to have to deal with on holidays. But he has to do a Thanksgiving game. There's a game on Christmas that he'll be doing. Like, that's the one downside of that job. Peyton's kind of got the best of both worlds. I'll just do the 10 weeks where it's convenient and make a lot of money.
It's interesting. What's next for him? We just don't know. But what's next for another former Bronco that might have a chance to get into the Hall of Fame next year? I'm gonna bounce a name off you. Coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.